Okay, we are resuming the public board meeting May 13th. It is about 11:04. And next on our agenda is the presentation from NASA Principal Regional Director Katrina Salazar.
Well, this is great. Do we have Alfonso on the line with us?
We're getting to do that right now.
Do you want me to get, do you have the number? Hoping to maybe arrow.
Hello, this is Alfonso. I can't take your call right now. Please leave me a message and I will get back with you as soon as possible.
Hi, Alfonso. This is Kimberly with the Oregon Board of Accountancy calling you for the presentation this morning. I will try you in a couple minutes.
Well, if you don't mind, just let me know if you want me to stop talking. And I'll go ahead and get started. What I'd hoped to do, I saw on your agenda you have several items. I'm hoping to kind of roll, I think, A, B, and C together and do some Q&A. When we get Alfonso on the phone, we'll have him handle part of the Q&A specific to his area. And then at the end, we'll make sure we get hopefully all of your questions answered. But thank you so much for inviting me here or welcoming me to your meeting. My name is Katrina Salazar. I was appointed to the California Board of Accountancy in 2012 and then was honored to be appointed to the NASBA Board of Directors in January of 2018. So my tenure sort of, I think, maybe parallels Kimberly's a little bit. So thank you for having me here. I'm delighted to be able to come here. And also, I know you're having a transition, so I do want to, in front of all of you here today, thank Candace as well as Kimberly for participating in the NASBA regional call. So we do those every so often. I'm sure you get reports, but it's very helpful to find out how things are going in the various jurisdictions. We will have Alfonso Alexander joining us by phone. I took some liberties with the PowerPoint, and he's actually the Chief Ethics and Diversity Officer at NASBA, and he's also the president of the Center for the Public Trust. So he is sort of the cheerleader and the real force behind the ethics training modules, which is part of what I understand this board has a little bit of interest in. But what I do want to kind of start with is, since I'm here on behalf of NASBA as a regional director, I do want to confess, when I first joined my board, actually for several years after being on my board, I didn't really quite know what NASBA did. It was sort of an education, so I will talk a little bit about the mission. If it's too much, my apologies. I know we have some board members. I think there's some folks who've been to NASBA meetings who it's probably old hat. But I do want to just lead with, really, the mission of NASBA is to enhance the effectiveness of boards of accountancy. So it's really about groups just like yours and what can NASBA do. So one of the things they do with their mission towards helping boards be more effective is there are a lot of free tools and services. So there's a big long list there. Some of the things I've already heard mentioned in the meeting, there is the CPE audit tool. There are currently, just to hone in on that because it was mentioned earlier, there are 8 states currently using it. There are frequently asked questions and information on the NASBA website, and as I understand it, it's being rolled out in the next few weeks to more states. And so the process is really following the interests, I think, of the states, and some states are sending letters to licensees and some states are doing emails. But the idea behind the CPE tracking tool is it's the new iteration of a legacy system there, and the idea is that it is allowing individual licensees to upload through a secure website their information. There's also an option about their CPE that they're taking, and then the boards will be able to access it. So the idea is it's consolidating information in one location. There's some abilities for state boards or state societies, if they are the provider of record, to do uploads for their courses. But it is really, I think, designed, from what I've seen, for individuals to put stuff in from all of their sources. So that is sort of consolidating information. From what I've heard from different jurisdictions is some boards are really excited about this because it is giving them the ability to add depth to their CPE audits because they can get a lot more information, they can get a lot more detail. And other boards are looking at it saying, we have staffing crunches, this is a great way to maybe automate what's a very manual process.
He's ready to call.
Okay,
are you okay with that?
Yeah, go for it.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. But
no. I'm here at your guys' pleasure, so. Or dialing, I should say. I'm sorry I missed your elections, and congratulations.
I know.
Congratulations.
Hello, this is Alfonso.
Hi, Alfonso. This is Kimberly, and you are connected with our board and Katrina right now.
Good morning.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. I hope you all are doing well.
Good.
Thank you.
Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, what I did was I just started the presentation, and what I've asked is Alfonso to join us. I gave a very brief introduction about your title, and I corrected it. Sorry about that on that original slide. We're gonna put you hopefully in the hot seat to answer some of the Q&A on the ethics program. So. Just jump in if you have comments as we go along. And right now, I just talked a little bit about some of the free tools. The list has been provided. Legislative tracking. I will say, coming from my state, one of the ones I was really excited about is communications. NASPA's got some really nice resources with communications, videos, newsletters. So our state is actually just starting to use NASPA services. So that, you know, it's very exciting to see that. So again, these are all things that NASPA provides free of charge for boards. NASPA is also a forum for regulators like yourself and professionals to get together to talk about the issues that are impacting the profession. And some of those joint projects between the AICPA and NASPA to elevate those issues are highlighted there. So we've got the evolution of CPA, which is something that I think Kimberly mentioned was discussed as a major topic at the last executive director's meeting. That is going to continue to be a big discussion point. So what that is, for those of you who've heard about it and aren't quite sure, is that the issue with the evolution of the certified public accountant is how do we as a profession evolve our profession and licensing standards and the model in an environment where there's just rapid technological change. So how do we not be disrupted? How do we change with the times? And so that is a really important conversation. That is a joint project, and you will see featured at NASPA meetings. There's also a code of professional conduct. So here, so close to California, Washington, I know you're thinking about issues like mobility and CPAs crossing state borders. So in this age of mobility, NASPA is encouraging boards to consider a uniform code of conduct. So at this point, we have 28 jurisdictions that have adopted the AICPA code and 12 jurisdictions, including Oregon, I believe, that have adopted partial parts of the code. And then there's conversations with AICPA and NASPA regarding CPE reciprocity. So today, if you're licensed in two states, then you currently, if there's no reciprocity, you have to comply with all of the rules and regulations in each within each of the states that you're licensed in. And this idea of reciprocity allows a state to recognize completion of the CPE requirement in the CPA's state of principal place of business as meeting its own CPE. So, again, it's you know, it's a very interesting idea, and at this point there are 23 states that have adopted it, and NASBA's position is to really support the states in their decisions and make sure that they're supported in whatever that decision is. NASBA can also keep states sort of up to date. So Kimberly mentioned really small maps that are hard to read, so you're welcome. I brought some. For mobility is one that there's been a lot of activity in. So right now, everybody's sort of aware of individual mobility. Firm mobility is less widespread. We have 26 jurisdictions that have adopted it, and two enacted them this year. So Wyoming and New Jersey adopted it in 2019. There are active bills in Massachusetts and Maryland, and then Nevada has started conversations between the board and the state society, and they've preliminarily agreed on language, so that's a sign that that will continue to move forward there. So there's a lot of variation in what states are doing, and part of what NASBA does is hopefully try to keep everyone up to date with what's happening around them. Another issue with a lot of movement nationally is CPE. So there's been an evolution of learning programs for professionals. And at this point, we have 20 boards that have adopted both blended and nano learning programs. So those are the ones in green. California is hard to see. We're sort of lined out. We're in the process. And that's because our rules and regulations take 18 months to go into effect. So don't hold your breath, but it will eventually have that fully recognized. And then it looks like we have five boards, which are blue, which have adopted the blended learning programs only. And then there are about four jurisdictions that are going through currently evaluating their rules. So again, we're seeing some differences in what boards are interested in pursuing and accepting. I was also told that your board had a lot of interest in the experience verification program. So I'm not sure how much background you have on this, but I brought a map that shows you we actually have 10 states that are currently utilizing this service. I know you're aware that your neighbor to the north is a participant. And I will admit, California doesn't use it, so I really didn't know a lot about it. I've spent some time on the phone with the folks at NASBA because I kind of had some questions. How does this process replace or validate experience? And so this is Katrina's general process. This is not official coming from NASBA. This is based on my interviews with the people that are doing this. What I was pleased to see and made me feel comfortable, because I'm on a board and I know people will come in to work in our state, is that there is criteria. The criteria is 2,000 hours of appropriate experience. And there's a very detailed list. So appropriate experience is not accounts payable. It is not, it is not a laundry list of things. It doesn't mean any accounting work. It means appropriate compilations, reports, internal audit. So I do have some more information on that. But that is key, is that all experience doesn't count, and it needs to be a certain number of hours. And then there's verification. So there is information provided not only by the applicant who is applying for this, but also there's sort of an independent verification from the employer or the employers. So that candidate can have worked in multiple places over multiple jobs, and that NASBA will get information from the HR department or the supervisor and then validate those job descriptions and then cross-reference it against what the candidate or the applicant is providing. So then comes the customization, because every accounting job, probably if we looked around this room, probably every CPA does something a little different. We've got lots of specialties and areas. So then the process is really customized. So it's going to be different for someone who's an internal audit versus someone who is a tax, in the tax side versus the audit side. And that customization goes into creating an appropriate evaluation, and then the gathering data is the actual interview with the candidate, where all those sources are kind of brought together, and then it's interactive to see if those answers make sense, and they're very specific, and they sort of will expand based upon what the candidate's responses are. And then there's a final report that is issued, and that is given to the State Board of Accountancy to make their determinations about licensure. So I thought that some of the important elements for me as a board member was that this is being done by a CPA here in the U.S. This is a NASBA person who's committed to the mission of the boards. And so for me, I was able to kind of get some comfort with the quality and the level of the people that are doing it. They have extensive experience and experience doing interviews as well. So I thought that process, hopefully that is maybe value added. I don't know if anybody had given you quite that much, but I kind of grilled them a little bit about it. And it comes down to the why, as I understand it, seems to be not every CPA or every candidate that wishes to be CPA always is able to get that experience. Not everybody can quit their job and go work for a direct supervisor with a CPA. And so this provides that opportunity for those that have done the work and have gained the experience commensurate for licensure, but unfortunately just don't have a supervising CPA to sign off for them. Where they're at currently. Are there any questions about that while we're...
One question. You mentioned that NASBA staff is the one that serves as the CPA supervisor during the interview, but it's my understanding that a CPA applicant can find their own CPA to verify the experience through that verification system as well.
Well, they do. Let me clarify my understanding. So the interviewer is NASBA. The interviewer is the person who's responsible, but the verifier is that independent third party that says, yes, Sally Sue worked for me in this job in this many hours, and then sends a job description, which is then used to evaluate the candidate's responses and to tailor the questions. So they're verifying it, but that doesn't mean they're doing the interview, and the candidate still has to be able to show the skills and the background and be able to respond to the type of questions that someone with that experience has had. Does that clarify?
Yes.
Yeah. So I couldn't get my friend to sign off for me and be my verifying
person.
Could
I say I was Sally Smith even though I'm Jane Doe? I mean, do they verify who they're talking to through Skype before they interview a person that on the other end could be Deanna?
I will have to ask how they do that because I don't know the answer. But what I would say is from the other areas in terms of exam security, license security, those things are pretty important. I mean, they're hugely important. They're paramount. So I feel pretty confident that there's some mechanism in place, but I'd have to find out how they're doing the verification. Yeah.
You said this was very specifically for those people who can't quit their job and or use the example, and maybe they can't quit their job to go in and work under a licensed CPA. Mm-hmm. And I guess that causes me some concern that we've got somebody out there, maybe they're doing their own thing under their own shingle, who's to say they're doing it right just because they have a year of seat time under their belt? I think that time under a licensed mm-hmm. CPA, I think ours is they have to license a CPA for 5 years. There's a reason for that. And so this kind of eliminates.
You have 5 years here?
Our supervisor has to have 5 years.
Oh, five years experience,
five
correct.
Years have, yeah.
Okay, not 5 years of experience.
Has to have been licensed for 5 years. And we, you know, there's a reason for that.
Right.
But we want that. And part of it is that supervisor is coaching and mentoring and helping this person do it the right mm-hmm. way. So by eliminating that, I'm not confident that they're going down the right road.
So these are difficult questions, which I would say one of my initial reactions is this concern is understandable and valid. I have heard it played out with the general experience requirement, what is adequate, the same kind of conversation. And what I will say is that my understanding is that the licensure for CPA is an initial licensure criteria, which is set for, I believe, the exam and the experience is set for a certain amount of expertise. So they're not expecting someone to have a decade of experience. So that those questions are keying in on those areas and those judgments that you're looking for, that it's geared towards that entry level. Because I have heard that. What if someone gets a license, they go hang out their shingle? But that's also, I believe, the same argument with anyone, because it's an initial licensure, whether or not they had a CPA supervising them and they hang out their shingle. I'm not well versed in this argument, but what I would say is I will ask maybe the person that runs the program at NASBA, but to do a follow-up with Kimberly, if that's okay, to maybe flesh out some of those.
We posed probably at mm-hmm. least 20 questions to NASBA. They've responded to them. We have, I think, the information. I mean, if there's any additional information, I would like to know, how they verify the person that they're talking to on the other is
yeah.
actually the person.
That one I'll find out.
I don't think we asked that question.
I have a basic question, and maybe this is mm-hmm. very basic, but I'll blame public member on it. So clearly there's been a rule established. CPAs have been around a long time, mm-hmm. and they've always had to have this requirement that they have to have some, experience, somebody verifying
right.
their experience. Why is this an issue now? Why can't they follow the rule that's been in place for eons? Mm-hmm. Why are we switching it to this other model?
Well, and I think maybe that is the concern that I'm hearing in the questions that are coming from this board are, is this being used in lieu of another methodology? And anecdotally, I don't have stats, but my understanding is that that is not what this is supposed to be. And I don't know that it is being used that way. I would have to ask for some statistics from NASBA, but the idea is that it is to be able to address a potential barrier to entry for licensees that are coming into this with being a roadblock that is keeping them out. So it is not intended to be a way to necessarily avoid it. And I would suggest that if that's probably part of the interview process. If one of the supervising folks is going to be a CPA, well, then why didn't that person sign off? I mean, I think that is part of the process, and then being able to go back in and evaluate the work product with the questions. I don't know if that's a satisfactory answer, but I kind of think, maybe that is what I'm hearing as a potential concern. Rather than adding a pathway for people, it may be a detour for some. Okay, so with that, I want to talk about something kind of fun and exciting. One final area that Kimberly asked me to talk about specifically is the ethics training modules that were developed by the Center for the Public Trust. There are actually three modules. There's one, it's hard to read, but orange is culture, purple, I believe, or maroon is leadership, and then the green is strategy. And there's also an optional fourth module that is, Alfonso can talk about this later, but it is customized to the needs of an individual state board. And since I'm in the room with you today, I am going to make a yeoman's attempt to walk you through some of this, but we have the real expert on the line with us, Alfonso, and he will be listening in, able to handle the wrap-up and really take the Q&A, because this is, you know, this is right in his wheelhouse, and this is the one. This guy, Alfonso, is our expert in this area. So, Alfonso, are you still with us? Did we lose you?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
No, I'm here.
Did you want to say a couple words before I go ahead and start through the slides?
Yeah, I can just give a little bit of a scope, if that's okay. We developed this program initially for the three modules that that were first mentioned, but then you see them as a general generic product that we developed for the open market. What has happened is there's been a lot of interest from state boards, because we started down the road a couple years ago with a couple state boards where we actually started using this for discipline purposes, so for it to go along with any penalties that boards have deemed necessary for individuals who have violated a state rule or reg. And so that's really what we've done, is modified it to use it for that purpose. And these three modules that you'll hear about here in a moment are the general components of it, and then that state-specific one is where we really get into the state rules and regs. And we've got a couple ways that we're doing it. One key thing to note is it is not at all for CPE, because we made a decision that we will not compete with CPE providers due to our relationship with NASA.
Okay, great.
Well, I'll sit back and listen from here.
All right, well, thank you. I appreciate you being on the line with us. One of the sort of key elements of this ethics training is it's online, it's available for practitioners, and it's behavioral based. And Alfonso can probably touch on this in his wrap up a lot more. But the idea is that it is designed to evoke the outcomes that boards are looking for. So the idea is that it's getting away from an unknown provider with a click the box to something that is behavioral based and focused in some core competency areas. And really the goal of this is to reduce repeat offenders. There are some states who've seen licensees come back for issues more than once. So what I will share with you is that as of today, there are 9 states that are currently using the ethics training as an enforcement option. So they are using it as a remedial disciplinary action and requiring those licensees subject to discipline to complete these courses. The cost for the 3-module program, because everybody wants to know costs, we're accountants, we want to know the bottom line, is that it is $250 for the practitioner if it's the sort of more standard 3-module program. If there is a 4th customized module specific to, say, the state of Oregon, the fee for practitioners is $400. The important thing is that there's no cost to the Board of Accountancy. The costs are recouped from the practitioner who would otherwise be, in theory, taking an ethics course at the request of the board. And so the respondents are then assigned to take and pass these various courses. To give you a little bit of an overview, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around, well, what's a course on culture? So the graphic to the left kind of gives you the visual and what it looks like. But these are some of the focuses. So how to develop ethical cultures, increasing productivity, employee retention, how do you manage ethical diversity? So these are some of the core areas and focuses within the culture module. The leadership module focuses on the impact of leadership to organizations, how leadership at every level is impactful, and then how to deal with opportunity and responsibility. So again, there's broad areas of interest to a lot of licensees. In the strategy module, there is communications, engaging employees, maintaining ethical cultures. And within those, it's important to kind of look at it and say, what would that experience be like to a practitioner? So this slide is the access portal that a practitioner who was assigned this as a remedial measure for an ethics course would actually go to it and have their secure login. And then what that practitioner is going to see while they're in there is actually a mix. You know, it has to be engaging, it has to be interesting. And one of the very first things is the introductory video. And so NASBA will customize an introductory video specific to the state that is utilizing that module. And so in some cases, someone from the state wants to be in the video. In other cases, board members and staff want anonymity, and so NASBA can provide the face and the voice to that as well. But you'll note, if you could read the tiny print, that the banner is reflective of the state that's actually using that that module. And it also will introduce the relationship with NASBA and why this this ethics course is being, you know, assigned. To get a little bit more in depth on what it looks like, this is the course outline feature. So, you know, it looks very familiar and fairly easy to navigate with the table of contents on the left and a summary. It allows you to toggle through and look at the various modules. So each class is broken down into sections. Then, to keep things interesting, there is voice over moving text. So again, this isn't just a static screen that's repetitive. The idea is to be engaging and to keep the interactivity. There's going to be a mix of images as well as some live video as well. So in this case, what we're looking at is a brief video, which is a scenario in the ethical leadership module. This viewing this video allows the practitioner then to engage in Q&A and some evaluation of the content. So again, this isn't just a click-through process. So each section, of course, how do we know it's being effective? Each section has a quiz. So there's a sample of a question. And there's immediate feedback. So when a quiz answer is responded to at the bottom, it's hard to see, but there's immediate feedback. It's either correct or it's not. And if it's not correct, we see in this next slide maybe that there is three buttons: review, next, and submit. And what happens is, if the response is incorrect, the participant is directed to re-review the material and to be able to get to that corrected answer. So I will say, one of my questions was, you know, what about pass-fail? How many times? You know, so if questions are missed or modules are retaken, a couple important things. NASBA can tailor the pass-fail ratio to the desire of the board. Some boards have 80% all the way up to 100%. You have to have everything right. NASBA can also tailor the number of times someone can retake it. And if someone retakes it, when questions are retaken, there's a randomized order to the questions and the answers. So again, it's not rote. NASBA is very cognizant of those sorts of security issues along the lines of, you know, personal identification, making sure that the work is actually being done by the practitioner and not just clipped through. It's a little hard to see here, but for those people with eyes like mine getting older every year, there's a little tiny link that allows the viewer to make the screen actually larger, so you can go to a full screen and have a little bit more functionality, which is something that some of the practitioners taking it might like. And then lastly, if you've ever been like me and you go through CPE and you are interrupted and you want to know where you are, there's actually a counter at the bottom of the table of contents. So you can see these programs are designed to be an hour in length. Of course, it's not on the exact timer. That's the estimated time for completion. But there's a little counter at the bottom that helps the participant know kind of where they are in it. So if they're interrupted, they can go back to that location and pick up where they resumed. So the goal of all these slides really is just sort of give you a visual and kind of anchor that conversation. And at this point, I wanted to bring Alfonso back into the conversation to do a wrap-up and also talk with you a little bit more about, you know, the vision of CPT and what you guys are trying to do with this. Are you there, Alfonso?
I am, thank you. You great job of covering the information. The only thing that I would add in terms of wrap-up is we see this as an opportunity for the Center for the Public Trust to partner with boards to help make an impact. And unfortunately, I know all boards have people that have some type of ethics infraction. Many of the boards already had some course that they were requiring in addition to whatever other penalty that an individual may take or may have, excuse me. And what they were saying is that they continue to get repeat individuals violating some of the same issues. And so the focus here being more behavioral, we believe is a positive and something that can make a difference. And so if we can just get somebody to pause before they make a decision that's going to end up being a violation, then we think we've made some progress. These three modules, we can customize pretty easily to implement them at a board level as part of the discipline program. And then that fourth module takes about, it takes probably about 3 to 4 months to develop, depending upon how many changes we have to make and edits we have to make back and forth. So we've gotten a couple of them done for states now, and we're working on about 6 more. And now we've developed a system that we believe we can get them done faster by utilizing the template that that we've used for these first few. So I'll stop there and field any questions that you guys may have.
Alfonso, this is Kimberly. I remember you, something I was also impressed with that you told me the last time we spoke was that the board can kind of go in and see the progress of the licensee taking the course, so we can see if they're on track to passing it and their progress and perhaps even the scores. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah. Go in. We don't have the ability for you to go into the system right now, but we can pull the report on demand.
Okay.
We already give a report every month. So any that you, I'm not sure what your process is like, but Missouri, for example, Missouri will have a settlement with the practitioner, and as a part of the settlement agreement, it would be that they have to take this course, and they have 3 months to take it. And Missouri will get a monthly report, and each one of those reports, they'll be able to look and see where individuals are in the program and what their scores have been on the exams that they take throughout, because their exams throughout the program, not just at the very end.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I would just repeat, and I think Alfonso mentioned this, or it's in one of the slides, is There is a fee for the practitioners, but all the proceeds, it's not a profit generating model. It goes back to student education and ethics and sort of helping the next generation of professionals with their journey through this. And I kind of like that. I thought that was a really nice thing, that again, their support for those student programs and development going forward.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
I'm sorry, we would love to partner with you guys if this is something that you think might be helpful to help mitigate some of the issues that you see, particularly any that are repeat issues.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You're welcome.
All right.
I'll be in touch.
Well, thank you, Alfonso, for joining.
Thank you, guys, and I wish you the best with the rest of your meeting. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
And then I'll just be real quick with a quick wrap-up. I know, I'll be super fast. So I do want to give you an overview. You guys have already talked about NASBA events here, but I want to remind you that there are, the Western Regional is coming up. Your board members are welcome to go to either regional, either one which fits into your schedule. Most folks go to the region in which they're in. So we're at Salt Lake City for the Western Regional meeting this year. And again, this is part of how NASBA facilitates that forum between regulators and practitioners and allows sort of the free exchange of best practices. There are scholarships for new board members that NASBA provides to facilitate that travel where it's a budgetary issue. And if you have not been to a NASBA meeting before, even if you are already maybe not a new board member, I would encourage you to try to go to the new member orientation. So if it's a new experience, it's definitely worth going. And that is part of the orientation happens at each of the regional meetings. There is an annual meeting this year. It will be in Boston. And I just want to give you a quick taste of some of the agenda items because they are things that you guys are talking about, and I've heard some of it today. The information and registration is open on the NASBA website, but this year's regional meetings, we're talking about CPA evolution. The outcomes of the working group that was created are going to be presented, and there'll also be an evaluation of the guidelines that are being developed for the profession. There's going to be a report on the 120-150-hour task force. So the NASBA chair, Janet Gray, created a task force to look at the educational hour criteria and the concerns and issues and outcomes that we've seen with the 120 to 150 and comparing what various states are doing. And that's really bubbled up from states. States have been saying the pre-licensure education they want to talk about, is it doing what we wanted it to do? Does it make sense? Is it the right thing for our profession? There's UAA committee updates, so peer review, non-compliance with laws and regulations, what is happening internationally that is impacting our profession as CPAs. And so if you can attend the meetings, please do. You're welcome. NASBA really wants to see as many board members there and to provide the support. So Kimberly, please call anytime you need anything. But I do have a couple contact numbers here. Dan Dustin is the NASBA Vice President for State Board Relations. He is, unlike me, I'm a volunteer. You can always call me, but Dan's always at his office. You might have to wait a day or two for me to call back. But Dan Dustin is available at NASBA. Now, if you have specific questions about the CPT ethics module, then Alfonso, that's his office line there. So with that, I'd just like to say thank you so much for giving me the time. It's been a pleasure meeting you all, and I will stick around if you have a break at lunch and just make sure that if you have any other questions, I can answer them. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. still in public session, we're going to move to agenda item 17B, request for reconsideration of relocation. Mr. Smiley.
Mr. Smiley, could you have something to present to us yourself?
Not at this point. I'm just here to answer some questions if you might have some.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
So does anybody have any additional questions regarding this request?
So, Mr. Smiley, just for the record, the board was presented everything that you provided to me in your request for reconsideration. I kind of summarized, you know, the history of your license, where you are now and where you are. They've reviewed that memo, and so they're going to start just discussing that. Rest assured that everything you provided, they did get. So.
Thank you very much.
Okay, additional comments or questions from any of the board members to Mr. Smiley?
I make a motion to deny the request for reconsideration.
I'll second that.
Is there further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion passed. Okay. So, in the matter of agenda item 17A, the request for reinstatement of an expired license clothing.
I make a motion to deny the request to reinstate the expired license for Mr. Bullard.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, motion passed. Okay. Let's see what we have. Kim, do we have old business that we need to review?
Do not have any old business.
Brings us to item 19, public comment. Was there anyone who wanted to come forward and make a public comment? Okay. Qualifications Committee, meeting summary from the April 10th, 2019 meeting.
And there were four candidates who were presented. I was not there, but I did get a report. And all four of them were accepted as being approvable. New word.
I make a motion to accept the recommendations for the committee of licensure of the individuals submitted.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passed. Ratification requests, CPA certificates and permits.
I make a motion to accept the provisional licenses issued by staff for the individuals presented to us today.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? And motion passed. Firm registrations.
Make a motion to accept the firm's provisional licenses issued for the firms as presented to us today.
I'll second the motion.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Municipal roster applications.
Make a motion to admit to the municipal roster the individuals presented to us today.
I'll second the motion.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion has passed. Okay, CPA examination, agenda item number 22A, CPA exam performance Q1 2019 supplement.
It's not a good idea. I do apologize, but NASBA has been, they've had an issue with their IT system, and it has been unavailable since before April 1st.
So, but this was just a performance. There's nothing that we needed to vote on that people are going to be waiting on.
And we will bring that forward. We'll bring both quarters forward at the year next week.
Okay. And what about item B, the 2018 Elijah Waltz?
That's in your materials.
Okay. Sales award recipients and the top 10 candidates for 18Q2 and 19Q1.
Informational only, but those materials are
okay.
In your packet.
We have one.
We have four Elijah Waltz sales.
Which is it?
Nice. 4 10.
Yeah. Nice. And some of those came to the OSCPA dinner as well to be recognized. It was nice.
All right.
That's pretty great. That's pretty amazing.
Would you know just offhand where they went to school at?
Yes. It's in your packet.
So. Portland State, Santa Clara, Brigham, BYU, and University in Taiwan.
Okay.
And Willamette University, I guess, and Masters at Willamette. Cool.
All right. Okay, Laws and Rules Committee.
Do you have a summary of the meeting we had for our first LRC? April 21st is that meeting. The meeting was productive, but we went over some of the, ground rules, but, that kind of laid out the platform of what their mission was. We went through Divisions 1 and 5, like I said earlier. We got through most of Division 10, but we do have some firm pieces to go through, and then some follow-up from what they sort of recommended while we were discussing. We'll make those changes and submit those to them again. We don't have a next meeting scheduled. We have sent a doodle out, so we're just waiting for them to respond to find a date. It's always hard to find a date that works for everyone.
But we're guessing July, because I think I heard.
June, July.
The May dates may be rolling off of that.
But I thought it was a productive meeting. We're going to go over some other kind of high-level points with them at their next meeting. I'm just going to kind of go through that with them. We are hoping to get through the rest of 10, 20, and maybe 30 at the next meeting, which just leaves divisions 40 and 50. So we're kind of perhaps just taking it in chunks is a little bit easier than having this big, piece. So I've been proud of what they did there. It was a really good committee. They all participated, being everyone there was brand new except for John Lossing. It was, they spoke up, they participated, they had good input. It was quite nice. So, very happy with the results there.
Okay. Peer review, OSCPA oversight report?
I don't have one to tell you other than if you do need anything from Phyllis, we could be, or wait, she's teaching classes today, so she's not available to be on the phone. I would just say that things are moving forward. We are staying, on par with what AICPA advises us to do. And we do have a new peer review coordinator we've hired. So as Leah will be available and be supporting, but Amanda will be the new coordinator going forward, working for Phyllis.
So this piece is just the annual report that the Society provides, the AICPA comes in and sort of monitors their peer review program and gives them a report. So the report from AICPA in regards to OSCPA's peer review program is attached for your review. It looked like it was there in pretty good shape. As far as all the requests, there's just one little piece that they needed to tweak, and I know that they've taken care of that, so we are good.
Stuart, did you have something?
I'll check with her later.
Okay.
It's on peer review.
Okay.
And I would guess that this report practice in this, and we've also...
Well, practice is kind of, it's on their agenda, they just haven't had a meeting, but they will be seeing this.
Okay. I think that brings us to the end of the public session items that we can do right now. So, Okay, so we're going to adjourn the public session for now. When we resume, we are going to be in executive session for a period of time that we're not going to commit to, but we will be going back into public session after the executive session. We are welcome to stick around for that piece of it.
And lunch. You can stick around for lunch as well.